Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Today's episode is brought to you by Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast. When you think about the future, what kind of technology do you envision? Whatever the future holds, artificial intelligence will undoubtedly be at the heart of it all. Join Graham Class as he hosts Season 2 of Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast, and hear from the minds transforming healthcare, retail, entertainment, personal computing, and more with the help of AI. Tune in every other Tuesday and explore the latest technology that's changing our world today and creating a more accessible tomorrow. Listen to Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
What's up, this your boy Lil Duval, and check out my podcast, Conversations with Unc, on the Black Effect Podcast Network. Each and every Tuesday, Conversations with Unc podcast feature casual and in-depth talk about ebbs and flows of life and the pursuit of happiness. Unlike my work on stage, I tap into a more serious and sensitive side to give life advice and simply offer words of encouragement, yet remind folks to never forget to laugh. Every Tuesday, listen to Conversations with Unc, hosted by Lil Duval on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Presented by AT&T. Connecting changes everything.
Are you looking for the perfect move-in ready home this spring season? Now's the time to buy at Fisher Homes. For a limited time only, enjoy below market interest rates starting at 5.375% APR, 6.139% APR. With these exclusive lower rates, you can save hundreds on a move-in ready home and start enjoying the benefits of home ownership even faster. Schedule your personal tour with one of our new home specialists at fisherhomes.com and make this spring the season you find your perfect home sweet home. Financing provided by Victory Mortgage, LLC, NMLS 461249, Equal Housing Lender.
Welcome to Stuff to Blow Your Mind from HowStuffWorks.com.
Hey, welcome to Stuff to Blow Your Mind. My name is Robert Lamb.
And I'm Julie Douglas.
Julie, where are the aliens?
Where are they? Are hiding in plain sight.
Like where? Like in this room?
Well, no, not this room, but somewhere out there in the universe.
Okay. Because if they were in here, they could be, I mean, I guess they could be in the recording booth there, which is the, I mean, we're in the sort of the podcast chamber, and then there's like this soundproof booth at the end that kind of looks like a phone booth, and I can't really see inside it. So there could be an alien in there.
Well, it could be like nano-sized aliens, like enmeshed in this, in the foam.
Yeah.
Batting around us.
But could they be out there? You're saying they could be out there, like their whole planets could be hidden, their whole civilizations could be hidden. Their presence in the universe could be hidden from us. And so the whole reason that we haven't found aliens could be because we just cannot see them.
That's right. It's okay. A possibility. SETI, have you looked into this?
Yes, they have. I don't think they've found anything yet. I don't know if they're doing much looking at the moment without the funding and all. But what does this have to do with the Dyson sphere?
It's nothing to do with vacuums.
Every time I mentioned this podcast to my wife, she was like, oh, you're doing one on vacuum. I mean, she was joking.
What an intriguing product that is. But and the inventor that everybody thinks about this Dyson dude. But it's not about that.
No, not about that at all. The Dyson sphere is one of those things that I imagine a lot of you do not need any explanation at all. You're like, yeah, totally Dyson sphere. I know what the concept is. But it has shown up in various sci-fi works. So like anyone who's ever watched like Star Trek Next Generation probably has seen one, or you've read enough sci-fi books. But for the rest of you, it is basically the concept of, all right, we have the sun, and the sun is just this giant generator of energy.
Yep.
Like our entire solar system is powered by the sun. So how would one harness the energy of the sun if you wanted to greedily take all of it up? If you wanted to be like my sister, when my family used to go out to have Mexican food, where my one sister would order the cheese dip, and then we would try and eat the cheese dip, and she would say, no, this is my cheese dip because I ordered this cheese dip as my meal. And so only I get to eat it. So if you were going to have that, take that attitude and use it on the sun, how would you collect all of it and make sure that you greedily, dipped all of the solar energy up on your chips for yourself?
And I was an alien.
And you were an alien.
I would lasso it.
You were okay. If you were an alien
in my spaceship, and take it with me, or I would construct a giant shell around it.
Exactly. There you go. Giant shell around it that where the interior of the shell absorbs the energy and doesn't let anything escape, so that nobody else gets to enjoy the sun and all its benefits.
Cheese dip for all aliens and only aliens.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. So yeah, this is this idea of this Dyson sphere.
Yeah.
Sort of. I mean, this sort is of. An interpretation of it, right?
Yeah, this whole podcast is going to be us getting a little deeper into the idea, what it means. But first, why don't we call it a Dyson sphere? What's the Dyson part? We're, of course, talking about a man by the name of Freeman Dyson, who is a pretty amazing guy. He's still with us. He's 87 years old. And he was something of a mathematics prodigy.
Mm-hmm.
A British extract came here at the age of like 23,
yep.
And was like immediately contributing like in major ways to our understanding of physics, unifying quantum and electrodynamic theory.
Mm-hmm.
And he's been there through the development of modern physics.
Yeah,
really.
Yeah, some very exciting developments.
Yeah, hanging out with Einstein, Feynman, Bohr, Fermi. Oppenheimer. I mean, the list goes on, and he's still just this sharp, incredible mind.
Yeah, he's an incredible thinker. And Oliver Sacks is a good friend of his and says like that the plasticity of mind is amazing,
yeah.
And the fact that he can still think so vitally at this age and have so many interesting ideas is pretty incredible. When most 20-year-olds are walking around with probably less imagination and. And not just imagination, but I mean, this is someone who is made huge contributions to his field.
Yeah, and was influenced by sci-fi, and grew up reading about spaceships. And as a boy, he sketched plans for a rocket ship that would explore the universe. And then when we got older, he actually worked on the Orion project, which I've blogged about in the past. I can't remember if we've mentioned it. We may have mentioned it on a previous podcast, at least in passing. But the Project Orion was going to be powered by nuclear detonations. Like, imagine a spaceship where every time, instead of like having like a thruster blast coming out the back,
right.
Imagine some dude standing in the back of it and just pitching an atomic bomb out every time they needed to blast forward a little bit.
Now, imagine how awful that would be for us Earthlings.
Yeah, like basically for the ship to leave the planet, you would have to have multiple atomic detonations,
right.
And then just steady atomic detonations to fly this thing around. But there was a time when this was like, before we realized how environmentally disastrous this concept was, it was like, well, this could work.
Yeah, it was an actual solution.
It was an actual solution. And Dyson was one of these guys that was like, yeah, we can totally do this. We can build this and we'll be, exploring, we'll be flying out to Saturn within like 2 decades. So he has a great futurist mind.
Mm-hmm.
And when he's handed a problem, he's great at tackling it and figuring out, well, let me take a shot at that. So he took a shot at this question that we, sort of fumbled with at the very beginning of this podcast. Where are the aliens? If there is alien life elsewhere in the universe, why have we not seen it?
And for him, it's because they're all hiding out in this sphere, right?
Right. But not in a sense of like, oh, there are humans out there. Let's not let them see us. Let's get behind these. No, it comes down to energy. All right. And we should probably just mention briefly the Kardashev scale, which is the...
It's not the Kardashian scale, by the way.
I'm not
Kardashev,
sure what that would entail, but I'm sure it would be
It
dreadful.
Would entail... something.
Yeah. Basically, it comes immediately into this idea of let's look for alien life elsewhere in the universe.
Mm-hmm.
What would it look like? How would we tell that it's there? And the theory is that it would come down to energy consumption. So the scale divides civilizations into 3 basic types. There's a type 1 civilization. And I should point out that we are not yet a type 1 civilization.
But, right. You have to master this level of energy consumption and harnessing, right?
Yeah,
in order to be a type one.
Yeah, it's like Dungeons and Dragons. You know, it's like you're leveling up. You know, to you're right now you're a level 0 halfling thief.
Right.
But if you get enough experience points, then you get to level 1, and that comes with new benefits.
And this would be your own planet, right? Type one. So if
type
I were
one
going to master
masters of planetary energy.
Yes.
It means they can harness the sum energy of an entire world. Mm-hmm. So we're not there yet. There's a lot of energy that we can't master, that we can't, that we haven't figured out how to use. And so we're not there yet.
Right.
Then there's a type two civilization, and they can summon the power of an entire star system. So basically they can enslave a star. They can take a star and claim it as their own cheese dip.
Mm-hmm.
And then a type three civilization, commands the energy on a galactic scale. All right. So they control a lot of cheese dip, an enormous amount of cheese dip, and are using a kind of technology that we can barely fathom. Like, it's beyond our real understanding of how it might even work.
Right.
So a lot of what we're talking about is type two, is type two technology, but some of it is conceivably type one as well.
So it would make sense that a type two civilization, like an alien civilization, which is a bit more complex than us, a lot more complex, would be able to construct this sphere, right?
Yeah. The idea that Dyson had was, all right, if there are type two civilizations out there, what should we look for? All right, they're harnessing all this energy. They have to use all this energy to power their civilization, mm-hmm. to power their interstellar transportation. How are they going to harness the energy of a star? And this was a scheme that he came up with. It basically comes down to the idea of just completely surrounding a sun with energy collectors.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Now, don't think of I've sort of avoided talking about the sci-fi stuff, but I should probably mention it now. Most people, I think, have encountered the Dyson Sphere on one episode of Star Trek: The Next Generation,
right?
Called, I think, The Relic, and it had like the dude who played Scotty was in it. It's been like a decade since I've seen it. All I remember that there was a Dyson Sphere. It was awesome because mm-hmm. it was like this giant metal thing, and you flew through it. The Enterprise flies through a door in it.
Right.
And on the inside, there is a sun, and there are like continents and cities all on the interior of this giant sphere.
Mm-hmm. Well, this is where it gets murky because, as you said, Dyson is someone who can actually create real solutions to problems.
Right.
And so here's this Dyson Sphere that he actually is trying to create to not only explain aliens, but also saying, how can we actually harness the star here and all the energy? We can put these collectors around it.
Mm-hmm.
So there are some actual real applications and something that might be able to be done.
Yeah,
some version of it,
stuff, yeah.
Right? But then it's also butting up against sci-fi, right? And
yeah.
One is begetted by the other, because if you look at Dyson's vision here, it's based on a sci-fi model.
Yeah, like Dyson.
So it's very confusing.
Yeah, Dyson himself says, oh, you should really call it like a Stapledon sphere, because
right.
he was inspired by a book by the name of Star Maker by Olaf Stapledon, which was written in 1937. So a lot of people encountered the Star Trek thing, which is neat in its own way, or
yeah.
they've encountered it in various other books. But the original idea was basically the idea of a lot of independent solar collectors
mm-hmm.
In orbit around a sun, to the point where it almost blocked out.
Right, like 100,000 of these collectors in orbit.
Right. If you've seen the movie WALL-E, and when WALL-E leaves the planet and the spaceship, mm-hmm. the Earth is just choked by satellites.
Right.
Like,
right.
imagine that kind of situation, except multiplied and surrounding a star.
Well, and some people would even say that a satellite is sort of this first step
right.
to doing this anyway.
Yeah.
And that there are multiple ways to try to play this out if we wanted to.
Yeah.
But we should probably discuss the different types of spheres. The sci-fi one that most people know, which is the type two, the one with the shell around it.
Yeah.
And talk about what is feasible and what's not.
Yeah. So the swarm one is pretty, the one we're talking about, where it's like a lot of independent pieces,
mm-hmm.
Which is sometimes called a Dyson swarm.
Also type one, right?
Also type one.
Mm-hmm.
And the other thing about this is there's a lot of our dealings with the Dyson sphere are kind of as a, just imagineering, as a thought experiment, is kind of a, you see physicists online who are just kind of, huh, I wonder how this would work. And they start crunching the numbers on it.
Right.
Cause it's kind of amazing, and it's a cool thing to do in your spare time. So there are a lot of different.
No Sudoku, DIY your own sphere.
Yeah. Your own cosmic, mega architecture. So if you're going for something rigid though, an actual like giant eggshell surrounding a sun.
Like the Star Trek one.
Like the Star Trek one. Yeah, that's a slightly different thing, because when you're dealing with like the gravitational effects of having all these little satellites around the sun, it's just these independent little things that are affected, right? It's a swarm.
Right.
But if you're talking about one giant structure, you're talking about one enormous structure. I mean, it's going to be like one or two astronomical units wide. An astronomical unit is the distance between the Earth and the sun.
Well, we're talking huge. Yeah. And it captures our imagination, because there's this idea that you could create out of this shell land, so to speak, or habitable areas that would greatly outnumber the amount of land that we have here on Earth. And that and,
on the interior, like a hollow Earth kind of a thing.
Yes. Yeah. And I actually had to draw several pictures of this to sort of cement it in my mind.
Yeah, because you hadn't seen the Star Trek episode, so you didn't have the model in your head.
No, no. But I still was thinking to myself, what area is going to be habitable, and what areas are going to have gravity and what aren't.
Because if that sphere surrounding the sun was not spinning, you know, there's not going to be any real – I mean, there might be – depending on the mass – of the actual structure.
Right.
There might be some gravity, but ultimately you would need either artificial gravity, which does not exist and according to some cannot exist, or you're going to need that thing to spin to create, to rotate, to create the kind of forces necessary for people to live on the inside of it.
Right. And the other cool part about this too is that it really could be hospitable, in the sense that if you are to enclose a star, you would actually have the sort of temperatures that, like room temperature, that you enjoy now. You might not have gravity unless you're rotating, but you would have.
And then perhaps only at the equator.
Yes. Right? Yes, exactly. So if you're going to enclose this thing and you're going to do it right, then you're probably going to have a structure that's really heavy, right? And you're also going to want to rotate it, and it's going to have to withstand the force of the rotation, right?
Right.
So that's where a lot of the problems come into. I mean, this is again, it's a very interesting thought experiment, but we don't currently have the materials that could actually do this, that could withstand the rotation.
Yeah, and then what if an asteroid hits it, right?
Yeah, you get knocked off center, all of a sudden you're colliding with the sun itself and melting.
Yeah, that's no good. That does nobody any good.
Yeah, but that would make a really great Bruce Willis film right there, I think.
Where he has to save the Dyson Sphere?
Yeah, don't you think? You just see him hurling toward the sun?
I just think if you're a civilization capable of building a Dyson Sphere, Bruce Willis is probably not ranked too highly in your backup plans if things go wrong. I mean, it seems like you probably have something more impressive to turn to.
I don't know. You talk to Jerry Bruckheimer. The other thing is, you would have no night, right?
Right.
Yeah.
So. Unless you had... Yes, some sort of scheme in mind. Which reminds me, I believe, you know, we're talking about like only the slim center of it would be habitable,
right.
Which kind of leads to the idea of a ring world, like the Larry Niven invented concept, which would be kind of like a Dyson sphere, but instead of it being a giant circle that encloses a star, it would be like a tire, like an artificial rings of Saturn kind of situation.
Right.
Where you'd still have people on the inside, but it would just be like the inside of a wheel. Imagine a spare tire, and there's a sun in the middle.
Yeah.
And then there are cities all up in the inside of the tire.
Okay. I like that. I've also heard it explained sort of like a canister too, right? So you're capped off and then,
in the
center.
Yeah.
Where it's habitable. And this again is because you've got the gravitational effects are optimal at the sort of equator line of this area. At the poles, you would have virtually no gravity whatsoever.
Yeah.
So, you know, and again, there's the asteroid problem.
Yeah.
But this is the sci-fi configuration that we're talking about. This other one, the Dyson one, we'll just go back to really quickly. Again, you've got these you've got these orbiting collectors of energy. And that actually could be used in the future. You could store it as antimatter. There are things you could do with this.
Yeah, and the thing is, you would collect all this energy with all these satellites, and then in this scenario, you would beam that to another habitable space station or ship or even a planet. So that's how that system would work. It would not be people necessarily living in each of all these little things orbiting the sun.
Which would be kind of cool in and of itself. But
I mean, it's kind of like there's some arguments saying that we should have solar harvesters on the moon and then beam the energy back to our planet. It's kind of the same concepts in play here.
Yeah, but of course, the problem is we haven't even mastered our type 1 civilization yet. And that's, we are really talking about a type 2 civilization here.
Right. And there's some even more advanced like ideas there. Like I've seen some proposals for a type 3 Dyson sphere, which can use even thinner materials, and would be kind of like a big bubble.
Yeah.
Around it.
Yeah.
I've seen like really advanced concepts. I mean, this would definitely be a type 3 for the Shakhtov thruster concept, which would involve like basically the star, like the structure around a star,
mm-hmm.
becomes a spaceship and just takes a star with it.
Hmm.
Yeah.
Okay.
So, like, again, but that's just crazy advanced future.
No, I'm trying to. Yeah, that's not really scoring in my head right now, I have to say. But I do think it's an interesting proposition about the aliens, not because I believe that we have aliens roaming around in the universe, per se, little green men in that scenario. But what I do think is interesting is that people have brought this up as an explanation for dark matter.
And we'll get to that after this quick break.
This presentation is brought to you by Intel, sponsors of tomorrow.
And we're back.
Okay.
Dark matter.
Dark matter.
Hit us with it.
It's a problem for us, right?
Right.
Because there's a bunch of it. We don't know what it is. We know that it's composing something like 95% of the universe, and yet we can't see it, but we know just with our mathematical equations that it's there.
Right.
So people have said, okay, if it's perhaps the situation here, the crux of it is that these aliens who are, you know, type 2, type 3 civilizations have, created so many different Dyson spheres that it's all being contained in there.
Like the universe is just more developed than we thought.
Yeah. And we just can't spot it. Like, you know, there's a gazillion of these Dyson spheres out there.
It's like the sprawl, right?
Yes, it's like
exurban mini malls everywhere.
Exactly. Enclosed in the structure.
Right.
And it really is an intriguing idea, but there are a couple of reasons why it just couldn't be. I'm sorry to say.
Well, one of the big ones, of course, is just the amount of materials required, especially when you start talking about this solid enclosure. But even the satellites, to build that many satellites, I mean, the sun is huge, guys. It's tremendous. Most stars are enormous, and ours isn't even particularly enormous sun.
Right.
I mean, there would be a problem just getting enough materials out of our own solar system to build this sort of thing.
Right. There aren't enough heavy materials in the universe to actually construct the amount of Dyson spheres that you would need to house all of these aliens hiding out and hoarding the dark energy.
Yeah. It's like
the dark
matter. And what are you building it for?
So, but again, it's very clever. Idea that they might be doing that. And then there's the fact that we could still detect a Dyson sphere because it would be radiating heat, right?
Yeah, they would have to be jetting some radiation.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, it can only be self-contained to a certain point as far as physics go. You would have to be able to detect it. So, I mean, that was back to Dyson's original argument. Like, he was just saying, we haven't seen aliens? Well, maybe this is what we should look for because this is what their energy collection might be like given sufficiently advanced technology. And so SETI looked for it a few times, you know, and they didn't see it. I mean, so we followed up on Dyson's idea and we're like, no, well, we don't really see Dyson spheres. And Dyson didn't have, I mean, I've seen interviews where he's kind of dismissive of the whole thing too. You know, he's just kind of like, oh yeah, Dyson spheres. I did that. But,
yeah, he's like, that was this thought that I had on a Sunday afternoon.
Yeah.
That I put on paper.
So it's not like he was disappointed that we haven't found a Dyson sphere yet.
Right.
But the concept continues to really resonate with everyone. I mean, besides the fact that it's just a really awesome idea, it's like the modern or like the space age Tower of Babel. You know, the Tower of Babel, the old, Bible story idea of early man became so pompous in their technological prowess that they were building this tower that would touch the sky, that would rival, heaven, that the crews working on it would be able to shoot arrows in the air and wing angels and watch them plummet to the ground, you know, that it was
mean.
Yeah. But it was just an offense to God. And it was about how awesome man was.
Right.
And so, you know, we build towers like that every day now. So it's no big deal. But what's the space age version of that. It would be, what if we built something so big and so awesome that we could fit the sun in it? Like that's just like we're just up in the game in terms of what's the most pompous thing we could possibly do with technology. You know, we could build a shell around the sun and then keep it for ourselves.
But see, that's what I think is so awesome about it too, because it shows this level of creativity. We cannot stop imagining for ourselves going beyond the boundaries that we know or suspect are there.
Yeah. And that's the thing. It's interesting to think about because in terms of, because you could come up with more grandiose ideas. Like, what if I built a giant steel egg and put the entire solar system in it? All right. Well, that's grandiose, but it says that's beyond the pale. Whereas the idea of building a Dyson sphere is advanced, you know, and it's certainly pushing the limits of what's possible in terms of matter within our own solar system, but it's conceivable. We can say like, well, yes, that could possibly be. And so it's interesting to sit around and do the math and also just envision what it would be like to encounter it.
Yeah. Dyson's an interesting cat. I remember looking up some stuff for another podcast, doing some research, and there was an article in Slate, and was
that for this podcast or the mom podcast?
No, not for the mom podcast. Because at the mom podcast, we are always talking about, theoretical physicists. But anyway, he was talking in an article in Slate. He was actually asked what our descendants could possibly look like trillion years from now when the stars have disappeared and the universe is dark and freezing. And so diffuse that it's practically empty, just from the article. And he said, the most plausible answer is that conscious life will take the form of interstellar dust clouds. So for him, consciousness is just a bunch of charged particles hanging out in a dust cloud. And he actually thinks that our consciousness will merge into one great mind and actually be able to transcend the locality of the physicality, really.
See, that's beautiful.
Of ourselves. I know. I really think that he's a very exciting thinker.
Yeah.
I think that he's a thinker that I like thinking about.
Well, excellent.
Give me some mail to think about.
Okay, yeah. Let's move on. Let's exit the Dyson sphere and see what we have from our listeners. Here is a bit of listener mail from a listener by the name of Zach, Z-A-K. He says, hi, Stuff to Blow Your Mind crew. I just got the How Stuff Works app, which is available for various platforms now. Definitely check that out. And have started listening to your podcast. I really enjoy it, but have noticed that you don't have many podcasts on space propulsion. I would love a podcast on realistic deep space propulsion, i.e. warp drive or hyperspace or any other ideas floating around out there. Great show. Keep it up. Did we do one on solar sails?
We did do one on solar sails. So check that out.
Yeah, and that's definitely space propulsion. Did we do one on warp?
No. I don't believe we did.
I wrote some articles on warp, so maybe I could brush up and we could do an episode on warp.
And the solar sails, I think we talk about the nuclear warheads too as a means of propulsion.
Oh, yes. Yeah. Go back through the catalog. We have touched on some space propulsion, but there are a number of cool concepts we haven't. And this is kind of tied to, it's not so much propulsion, but it's definitely in the same field as some of these ideas about taking science by the horns and using it to conquer the galaxy. Here's another one. This one is from Eric. Eric writes, a few years ago, my local paper, Rio Vista, California, about 20 miles northeast of San Francisco, wrote a headline that began, a man walks into an Isleton bar with a porcupine. Isleton is right across the river from Rio Vista. This sounds like the intro into yet another joke, but it really happened. Apparently, another patron of the bar was unhappy with this probably upset animal being there, and he and the porcupine owner began to fight. When police arrived, the porcupine owner fled on his motorcycle and led police on a high-speed chase over the winding levee roads. The man crashed and was arrested, but the fate of the porcupine was unknown. Indeed.
There is so much wonderful and wrong with that story.
And it's great that he brought up headlines, though, because as we talked about in our laughter podcast, which he's responding to here, laughter and humor, a lot of it comes down to this idea of the benign and the violation, but also to like absurd parallels. And there's a classic saying about headlines, that dog bites man is not a good headline. because that's very natural. You know, that's the natural perception of things that would happen. But man bites dog, that's a headline. That gets our attention because it's in a way, it's humorous because it's turning everything on its head.
Right.
And so...
It's getting you by the pants.
Yeah. So it's
pantsing you.
It is pantsing you. And as a former newspaper person myself, I really love a good juicy headline like that plays with your expectations, mm-hmm. that turns words around on themselves, and any time that you can get a sort of man bites dog effect in a headline, it's instantly kind of funny, but also you're like, well, I've got to know how that happened.
I got to know what happened to this porcupine.
It was never explained. I don't know.
Sheesh.
One of the that's the other thing about newspapers,
like
they never follow it up.
Oh, yeah, I know. I don't know.
It's news when the porcupine does something wrong, but what about when the porcupine's exonerated? Doesn't make the headlines at all.
No, it doesn't.
Porcupine exonerated? Well, that would be a good headline. But anyway.
Porcupine walks away, lives a normal life.
Yeah, that's not a story.
Yeah.
So, hey, if you have anything to share with us, if you have thoughts about Dyson spheres or want to point out any of the numerous examples of Dyson spheres and other cosmic megastructures from science fiction, let us know. We would love to read some listener mail about that on the podcast. And you can find us, by the way, on Facebook and Twitter. We have accounts on both of those. We are Blow the Mind. Look us up. Like us. Follow us, all that, and you will be rewarded with links to all sorts of cool stuff.
And don't forget to email us at blowthemind@howstuffworks.com.
Be sure to check out our new video podcast, Stuff from the Future. Join HowStuffWorks staff as we explore the most promising and perplexing possibilities of tomorrow.
Today's episode is brought to you by Visible. The future of wireless is here, and it's transparent. Switch to Visible, the wireless company that makes wireless visible. Get a one-line plan with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon, just $25 a month, every month, taxes and fees included. No hidden fees, no surprises, no, really.
What are you waiting for? Get with the times and switch to Visible at Visible.com. Monthly rate on the Visible plan. For data management practices and additional terms, visit Visible.com.
Are you looking for the perfect move-in ready home this spring season? Now's the time to buy at Fisher Homes. For a limited time only, enjoy below market interest rates starting at 5.375% APR, 6.139% APR. With these exclusive lower rates, you can save hundreds on a move-in ready home and start enjoying the benefits of home ownership even faster. Schedule your personal tour with one of our new home specialists at fisherhomes.com and make this spring the season you find your perfect home sweet home. Financing provided by Victory Mortgage, LLC, NMLS 461249, Equal Housing Lender.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Xfinity has free premium networks for everyone this month, no matter what kind of entertainment you love. Addicted to true crime? Catch killer cases and more spine-tingling shows on A&E Crime Central. Crave adventure? Explore Asian action movies on Hayah. Searching for something extreme? Check out skating, snowboarding, and more on Fuel TV Plus, the global home of action sports. And find crowd-pleasing bops on iHeartRadio's Hit Nation playlist. There's new free shows and movies to love every week. Say free this week in your Xfinity voice remote.